This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 47. Today, CJ and I are going to offer our thoughts on an interview that I did at SP TechCon with the panel participants for the panel Office 365, the Cloud, On-Premises, or Hybrid, Which Road Do You Take? Recorded live September the 22nd, 2014.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Call.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Here we are with episode 47. How's it going today, CJ?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm just back from a week in Boston, actually a week and a weekend in Boston for the SP TechCon conference.
Yeah, I saw some photos. It looked great.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was really good in terms of just like work-wise, like content and everything. I don't know if this is a sign of me getting older or whatever, but it was actually very nice that it wasn't a crazy rip-roaring party like some of these conferences are. But
yeah, you are getting older.
Yeah, it was good chill time with friends. It was good. A lot of good work stuff. A lot of good things went on. So yeah, and so we, as we'll explain in just a minute, we actually have a good solid three shows that we're going to push this week for people kind of stepping out of our normal publication. So yeah, crazy stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you got the opportunity to sit down with these folks while you're up there, and some of the luminaries in our sort of area of the world, right? So yeah, thanks for doing it.
Absolutely, yeah. What we're going to do this week is that we're actually going to release three shows. We're going to release them on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So if you're listening to this, you're listening to the show that came out on Tuesday, and we'll have two more that get pushed immediately after it. And the reason why we're shipping these all in one week is because what we did is I was the one that was there. You weren't there, but I sat down. I was involved with a couple of the different panels that we did. There were four panels at the conference. I was involved in two of them. And then I sat down with another one of them. And we all got in a room, put a microphone in the room, and we kind of did an after show type talk where it wasn't like the fun party atmosphere of after show, but it was more or less, let's get the panelists together and let's just have a conversation for about 15 to 30 minutes. And so there's numerous people I sat down with, and I figured, you know, it is the Microsoft Cloud Show. So it is about Azure. It is about Office 365. Office 365 does include things like Link, Exchange, Yammer, SharePoint. And we talk about competing products, but I mean, this last week was SP TechCon, and these panels really revolve around mostly the SharePoint space. And so instead of occupying 3 weeks of episodes for people, we decided let's push them all out at once, but make them separate episodes. So if people want to tune out, they can very easily tune out. But hopefully you won't tune out and you'll actually get something out of these discussions.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it'll be really good. That's sort of quite bite-sized too. So not, you know, not like a one single recording a couple of hours long.
Yeah, exactly. So first, before we dive into it, let's do a little bit of our little chat that we like to do before we jump into anything. So first, I want to just mention we made a big oversight, I guess, in our point, from our point of view. And he caught me at the conference last week in Boston. But Todd Clint made a mention just saying, hey, you guys did an Office 365 resource show recently. And he's right when he said that, it just popped in my head. I'm like, oh, shoot. We didn't include a mention of your netcast at all.
I bet it wasn't shoot that popped into your head either.
No, it wasn't. It was one letter short of that word, but in a different vowel. But yeah, so what it was is that Todd does a show called a netcast, and it's a live kind of video and audio thing that he does every week. And it's primarily for the admin space, which is not surprising that you and I forgot it because we're not on the admin space. But he goes over a lot of the latest changes and the latest cumulative updates and talk about some things that they deal with. So I've updated our Office 365 and SharePoint notes and resources post from a couple of weeks ago, and made sure I put a mention in there about it.
Yeah, major apologies on that one. That was a bit of a bad oversight,
yeah,
on our part.
It really, it strictly was an oversight. It was a mistake, and we shouldn't have done that. That definitely should have been in our list.
He's been going for a long time on that as well. It's been years now, so it's a lot of good material.
Yeah, he's been going a very long time, which, I mean, speaking of going on for a long time, I mean, we're pushing close to 52 episodes and doing generally about an episode a week. So we are within, I know we're pushing three out this week, but we've missed a couple of weeks here and there.
Yeah.
We're pushing a year on this.
I know. It's amazing.
We got to figure, what are we going to do for the 52nd episode?
I don't know.
Anybody got any ideas?
That's a tough one. Yeah. Send us your ideas for what you want us to do. No nudity, preferably.
Well, it's okay. If it's nudity, that's fine. Just let us know your iCloud address and we'll grab it that way.
And only if you're a celebrity.
Exactly. Well, hey, I'm sitting here. I'm deleting all the nude selfies off my iCloud. So to make sure, you know.
Just in case somebody hacks your iCloud and posts nude selfies of you. Oh, bad.
If they can find out how to get to my iCloud, let me know because I'm still trying to figure it out. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Before we dive into the stuff, let me just talk a little bit. I got a little bit of a wrap up from SP TechCon. Just a couple little things that highlighted, you know, I tell you, this show, in contrast to other conferences, this specific show instance, I guess, not so much the SP TechCon, but from the developer point of view, I was very surprised at the interest, the genuine interest and the excitement by developers about this new, I call it the new world of SharePoint and Office 365 development. It's not the new world for most web people because it's like doing everything client over HTTP and in JavaScript and client and using REST services and OAuth. It's new. I should say it's new to the SharePoint world. It's old hat for the web world.
Yeah.
But man, they ate it up. It was awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, really got me jazzed about it. So I did a workshop on the new world. I did workflow with REST services, SharePoint REST services, and then I did one on my single page app session and my Breeze and REST session. So we were packed. They put the developers in the basement too. It was great. There was only one room in the basement and it was the developers and no windows. I'm like, man, isn't this classic?
They're used to that. That's cool.
Exactly. I thought we were great. And then they put us upstairs and it was like going, apparently we stunk up the room so bad. They put us upstairs to let it air out a little bit.
That's too funny.
I'm kidding. That's not why they really did it. They might have, but they didn't tell us that.
Okay. Fair enough.
But
maybe they just wanted you to see some more light.
Yeah.
Everybody looking a little pasty.
They very well could have. Yep.
Yeah.
But then again, of course, the developers were supposed to look pasty all the time.
Exactly. That's part of the thing, right?
Yeah. I tell you what, though, man, I did something new last week, and I talked a little bit about it at the end of last show. I didn't use any PowerPoint.
Yeah, you told me about this. Actually, I read your blog, a couple of blog posts, maybe one in particular, about you presenting from GitHub.
Yep. Dude, it.
So tell us how that works. Like, do you just scroll through the markdown files, or how do you do it?
When we recorded the last episode, that was my plan. So there's a post. I have a post that up on my blog that we'll link to in the show notes that says I'm going to be using GitHub to present from. But I'm going to have two more posts. One is kind of like a brain dump, and then I'm going to have a kind of a walkthrough on how I did it. So basically, here's what you do: is you create a repository in GitHub, you make it a public repository. You have a README file that has the session title, abstract, your bio, and then some like the stuff that you would normally submit to a conference for your session. So like the end of it was like, you know, what the level is, what are the learning objectives and stuff like that. And then you've got all the demos you're going to do in the code as well. Mm. And then you have a presentation file. So mine is presentation.md. So it's a markdown file. And if you're not familiar with Markdown, I put a dummy blog post up a week or so ago about Markdown for Dummies, in a sense, just to get people who are not familiar with this old technology, make it demystify it for those of us who it's new to. And so you write the whole thing inside Markdown. And essentially, the Markdown file turns into HTML.
Yeah.
And it's just a bunch of H1s, H2s, and bullet points. Mm-hmm. So my plan was to take that, have some JavaScript I dropped in, which is great for when people want to go link and go consume it. But when I wanted to present, I was going to open up the dev tools, throw some JavaScript in, and let it put these big spacing between the H1s and H2s to treat it more slide-ish.
Oh, yeah.
But then I show up at a user group, at a local college to do a presentation before SP TechCon. A friend of mine saw my post, a guy named Tom Bates saw the post, and he's like, are you using your Reveal? And I'm like, no, I'm not. Do tell. There's this library. So I'm going to give it to you in a nutshell because I could talk all episode about this. This guy, what it is reveal.js is a library that you drop in. It runs on Node.js and runs all client-side, and it uses CSS3 animations and JavaScript to create slides out of your presentation. And so what I did is I created a branch in my repository called gh-pages, which if you're familiar with GitHub, it makes a pages site.
Yeah.
You open up the HTML file that they give you. You make a little tweak to it to point to your markdown file.
Huh.
Save it, and poof.
There's your presentation.
It's all slides. It's all presentation. So if you go to one of my presentations right now, on go to github.com/AndrewConnell, look at my repositories, you'll find one of the first ones listed. It starts with a P-R-E-S dash. Click on that, and then go to the, look in the README file, and one of the first links, it says view the presentation.
Yeah.
And it looks just like slides. It does it in the browser. So I literally presented straight from GitHub, and we found a couple typos during the session. We went in, made the changes. I just did a push and poof, everyone had it.
What?
Now, here's the cool thing. Now, at this conference, we had good internet. So this worked great. Good internet at a conference is generally an oxymoron. So there is also an offline story as well. So you can fire it up, run it offline. Everything runs great.
Dude, this is crazy.
Isn't that cool?
This blows my mind.
So you're looking at it right now, aren't you?
Yeah.
So it's cool. Hit escape.
Wow. Oh, that's cool.
So you can present left to right. And you can go stacks deep. And so you see where the bio stuff, it goes deep, but then it goes across as you go through the sessions and you can embed images and stuff. And if you try and print it, it prints as a PDF with each slide to a separate page, just like PowerPoint would.
That's pretty nerdy. I like it.
If you ever want to go back and see what the session looked like before, you can see the changes I made. So at one point, I had a demo script that I was using to build something out in SharePoint Designer in my workflow session. And a guy's like, is there anywhere you have notes on this? And I just held up my iPad. I'm like, yeah, I got all my notes right here. And he's like, where can I get your notes? I said, I tell you what, if someone reminds me at the end of the session, I'll take my notes, I'll stick them in a new markdown file, throw it in the demos folder, and I'll push the update out. Dude, I pushed the update out, and within about 10 minutes, I saw somebody on Twitter chime in and say, hey, I just got a notification because I was watching the repository on GitHub. Thanks for pushing out the SharePoint Designer notes.
Oh, that's so cool. The thing I like about it, right, is you can hit watch on your repo, and then you get updates of when you can check when the presenter puts in new versions of the presentation and stuff.
Yeah, so I plan on doing almost all the sessions I did at SP TechCon. I'm doing them for a conference, SP Live 360 in November in Orlando, including the workshop. And I have tons of changes I plan on doing. But the neat thing is as I do those changes, the people that went to my sessions at SP TechCon, they will be notified of when those changes are made. And they'll even see the specific commits and the comment to what change I made.
Yeah. Oh God, I've got to try this. This is so cool.
It's awesome. And the only thing that stinks about it, the conferences that say they need to have your slides. So you know what I did? You'll see a PPTX.
Printed a...
No.
Oh, you did that? You put it in a PPTX?
No. I took a PPTX and I made two slides. One was my bio and one was the title slide, and it had a link to the GitHub repo.
Nice.
But dude, it was awesome. I had some people in the session that couldn't see the code snippets, and they're sitting there with their iPads or their Surfaces, and they got the link at the beginning and they were reading it as I was presenting the session. They had the slides up in front of them, even when I made changes to it that one time. And they were all, some people even cloned it locally and were putting their notes in the session as I was talking about it.
Oh, dude, this is rocking. I like it.
Oh, it's great.
Anyway, we'll put a link in the show notes to this so people can take a look at the repo. And then we'll also put a link straight to the, to one of the slide decks. Cause to really understand it, you got to see how it gets presented at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I like it. That's pretty cool.
It was cool, man. Like I said, you can do the whole thing disconnected too. I use Node.js to present it. So it was just jump in, run to the terminal or in a command prompt and type grunt space serve and poof, you get a web server on port 8000 that's going to do everything.
That's so cool.
It's cool, man. I love it.
Nice.
I'm sold. Goodbye, PowerPoint. I'm more productive now.
You're in GitHub, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing against PowerPoint. It's just that I'm not efficient with it. And so this makes me more efficient.
Yeah, nice. I can totally get the developers in the world getting it right because they're using GitHub already or looking at it and you kind of got source control over your presentation and all that. Like that's pretty sweet.
Yep. It was fun. It was fun. So what's up with you these days?
Oh, last night I watched the Seahawks spank the Broncos. Well, spank is not exactly the correct word. The first quarter was totally boring. The second quarter got interesting. The third and fourth quarters got nerve wracking. And I didn't even know there was a fifth quarter in football. Who knew? Like the fifth quarter in and of itself, like, what the hell does that mean?
Hey, the best part about it, I saw somebody on Twitter said, after Peyton got that touchdown at the end of the fourth quarter, they said, oh, so that's how you quiet CenturyLink Field.
Dude, seriously. I don't know if everybody listening, but there's like the Seahawks crowd, the 12th man in Seattle is notorious for being super, super loud, right? And we were sitting there and I swear to God, I would have had earplugs. I could have had earplugs. It was so ludicrously loud. Vicky, my wife, she was sitting next to me. And we basically had to turn and yell at each other to be heard. So loud. And then right towards the end there when they got that touchdown, that you could have heard a pin drop on the other side of the stadium. It was terrifying. But we got there in the end, the fifth quarter. I don't even know why they call it a quarter. That's ridiculous. Mm. You've got to have four quarters. You can't have a fifth quarter.
They call it overtime. They don't call it a fifth quarter. I'm not sure.
Oh, they don't? Mm-mm. On the scoreboard, it had quarter five. Maybe the scoreboard doesn't deal with it.
That might be for all the people in Seattle. Hardly anybody watches football because they're all from overseas. So,
yeah, maybe. Anyway, so yeah, over time, we got it back just by the skin of our teeth. But yeah, it was great. So there's that. Been super busy getting ready for the rest of the year with some travel coming up. We've got Tech Ed Barcelona coming up. MVP Summit is also coming up in November. And a couple of other conferences going on. I'm going to SharePoint Connect over in Amsterdam later on this year. So that's also coming up. So yeah, it's a busy time of year.
Mm-hmm. It definitely is. It's like conference season's the beginning of the year and at the end of the year. So it's starting to really, really heat up. Well, cool. Do you want to talk a little bit of news before we play our first panel interview?
Yeah, sure. So there's been some Azure news this week. I guess the first thing that is the most exciting, I think, is sort of a more unknown feature of Azure that only recently was announced, I think, maybe back at Build, I actually can't remember if it was Build, the API management features in Azure. So this lets you basically front-end your API with Azure, and it gives you a whole bunch of really interesting API analytics and management capabilities. And so if you've got, say, a REST service, for example, you can front-end it with the Azure API management service. And you'll be able to see like usage statistics. You can do restrictions and things like that in there on your API. And it just generally gives you this much better visibility into who and what is going on in your API. And not that many people are talking about it, which I think is kind of sad. So that's come out of general. That is now come out and it's generally available. And so you should go and check that out. Up in the Azure management portal. But that's pretty cool for developers who want a sort of a front end and a bit more visibility into what's going on in their API.
Ah, very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I saw some other stuff too that they did about some things around like alerting, where they had the general availability of the Azure alerting with new alerts that they based on events. So that was more, from preview to GA. Another news on the API management and alerting went GA, and I think there was one more too, wasn't there, on the going from preview to GA?
Yeah, SQL databases. So I don't know if people know, but previously in Azure land, you really only had two choices for SQL. You had sort of web and business edition, I think it was, in the PaaS side, right? So if you wanted to host a virtual machine and do it yourself, no problem. But on the SQL side, they've now moved, so SQL database, they introduced basic, standard, and premium versions, which are now generally available, and some updated pricing. So we'll send a link off to that. But basically, the idea is that this gives you some more flexible pricing and more flexible tiering structure when you want to get into SQL databases in Azure with up to 99.99% SLA or uptime SLA.
Mm.
And things like hourly billing and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. And there's a bunch of different choices. So if you're just getting into it and you're doing development, you could choose the basic tier, and that gets you sort of things like you can restore within any point within the last 7 days, for example. Or you can start moving up to standard and premium for different sort of features. Like if you need active geo-replication between zones, then you can do that with premium, for example. Or sorry, more so with premium. And standard gives you a little bit of that.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's nice to see that come out. It makes a big difference for app developers and their choices for Azure with SQL and a bit more flexibility.
Oh, that's very nice. Well, cool. So I know we do have more news to share, but I think that what we're going to do is to kind of make each one of these episodes, kind of box them up into a little more bite-sized chunks. And so we don't run one real long here is why don't we dive into just kind of intro this, the meat of the show here, and then you and I will come back and kind of give some closing thoughts on it. How's that sound?
Perfect.
Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome. So the first panel, this was the main panel for the conference. This happened on Tuesday, September the 16th. SP TechCon, they had full day and half day workshops. And at the conclusion of the workshops, about 30 minutes after the conclusion, we had a panel. So the panel was titled Office 365, the cloud, on-premises, or hybrid, which road do you take? And the description of it is Microsoft is driving its SharePoint clients to Office 365 with promises of earlier updates and lower costs, but not everyone can go to the cloud. Which is the right path for your organization? Moderated by myself and some other SharePoint experts. So the people that were on the panel, I moderated. I basically just walked around the room with a microphone and I didn't give too many thoughts. I let them do it. But we had Ben Curry from Summit 7 Systems. We had Todd Clint from Rackspace. We had Ruben Gotz from Avanade. We had Jeff Roski from Jornada/Blue Metal. And then we also had Jeremy Thake was also on it. And you'll hear at one point during the panel, probably halfway through, we I guess you won't hear, we didn't record the panel itself. We record just the after show. But at one point during the panel, we had this challenge where the questions started to be like, hey, what's the Microsoft stance on this? What's the Microsoft story on this? Where are you on forms? Where are you on going to the cloud? Where are you on the next version of on-prem? Where are you on regulatory stuff? And it was kind of tough because the panel started to kind of get derailed and the other four people up there are like, hey, look, we're not going to give you our take on what Microsoft's stance is on this because you've got a Microsoft guy here, which is Jeremy.
Just beat up on him.
Exactly. And we're like, come on, we're supposed to make, this is not a Microsoft Q&A. This is a panel. We're supposed to give opinion. Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and play the outtakes there? And you'll hear a little bit of some background noise too, because we did this on stage immediately after the panel while they were breaking down the room. So in the back of the room, we had glasses, you know, tinkering. We had tables getting collapsed by the hotel staff. So a little bit of background noise, but why don't we go and play this, and then CJ and I will come right back and give our closing thoughts. All right, so I'm sitting here with a bunch of the guys that participated on a panel for SP TechCon. The panel was called Office 365, the cloud, on-premise, or hybrid. Which road do you take? And the whole concept of this kind of came about from a keynote that happened at the SP TechCon back in San Francisco, where we talked about kind of giving people the right guidance and some pragmatic guidance on when should you go with Office 365 here. So before we kind of kick it off real quick, I just want to let you guys just real quickly introduce yourself, just name, rank, serial number, kind of stuff and everything, no big bios. We're going to have links to all your contact info in the show notes. And so sitting here, I have...
I'm Todd Clint. I work for Rackspace Hosting, and I like turtles.
I'm Ben Curry. I'm here. I'm with Summit 7. I like turtles, too.
Ruben Gotz from Avanade.
Jeremy Thake from Microsoft. I only like Ninja Turtles.
Jeff Roski from Blue Metal Architects. I despise turtles.
I don't know where this turtle thing just came from, but okay, here we go. So we had a bunch of questions that came from the audience and everything. And we, in the show notes, I believe that they recorded this and they're going to post it up on the video to the panel on YouTube. And so we're not going to try and co-op what they're doing here. We're not going to try and rehash everything. If you want to see the panel, then you can go, you know, watch the video of the panel. We just kind of think of it as a bit of like an after show kind of a thing. Without all the beverages and stuff, we don't have the luxury of a bunch of beverages. So talking a little bit about like, you know, some of the questions that came up here, I guess one person asked about, you know, I want to go through and migrate my content from on-prem to Office 365. And I know the lady that asked the question, she kind of gravitated a little bit towards like AvePoint, but I know some of you guys talked about some of the other tools and everything that are out there. So did anybody want to just, you know, provide any additional thoughts on like some of the stuff that we
Well,
that
just
we
to extend her question was really, she's used to using tools on her on-prem, right. And she was asking, do those tools even exist in the cloud? She wasn't sure if she was safe going to the cloud without them.
Mm, yeah.
It kind of surprises me a bit from the perspective that, you know, if you look at the marketing of a lot of these vendors, they all seem to be pushing pretty hard on what they do and don't support in 365. So it would have been nice to have get more details on exactly what, you know, it was the products she particularly wanted in the cloud that weren't there, but it's always hard with these panels to go there. But a lot of these vendors, they did fall behind. Like they did, you know, Office 365 is never going to take off, So, you know, even when I was at Avport at the ISV, like pushing our guys to focus on 365 is tough. And you've seen now they're all playing catch up, right? They're all rushing going, okay, yeah, we have it, have support now.
I would agree with that. It's that's a really good point, Jeremy. Todd, you had something you said?
Yeah, I think she didn't know what she didn't know. So the tool she was using, she was using it to move things around, to re-architect and all that. And so she probably has seen a million times the migration tools, but in her head, that was not the problem that she had.
Right.
And so once we kind of framed it that way, we're like, yeah, you can migrate. I think that was the thing.
Cool. That's a good point, Todd. Yeah, Jeff.
Yeah, she was asking, like, basically just moving content from one site collection to another site collection, another web application. And really, all the vendors out there that support migration, they support it for Office 365. Right. Simple operations like that, definitely.
I found it kind of interesting that it seemed like from a lot of the questions we got, there were a good number of them that kind of dealt with that issue of either replicating their schemas and their setup and infrastructure and everything, not their infrastructure, but replicating their schemas, and then also replicating their data or migrating their data up. That seemed to be a big concern of not so much of once I'm in the cloud or choosing to go to the cloud, it was in 365. It was more or less, how do I get there? And once I get there, can I still do the same things on-prem that I'm doing today in terms of the stuff that you want to be able to manage, like the schemas and stuff that are there?
Right, and you get the questions around, you know, well, I need a dev environment, a staging environment, and a production environment. You know, there's different ways of doing that, but naturally, you know, it's a bit tougher when you're running that in Office 365 in prod and where you're going to run your staging and your development environments, for sure.
Yeah, it's a good point, Jeremy. Ben.
One of the things we've been doing lately with clients is using their MSD and Azure licensing to build their on-premise and then use a Office 365 different tenant and do some testing that way, like for a hybrid scenario.
That's a good point, Ben.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we've seen, and I'll be blunt, you know, it's unlike me, is that... these software companies, I love my partners, but their marketing is still 6 to 9 months ahead of what their product will do, especially when it comes to Office 365. I think the salespeople are assuming that their 365 product just does what the SharePoint product does, and they go to shows and they're saying that. But in practice, when you get in and actually try to do it, that's not always so.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
That's nothing new with Office 365, though. That's been around for...
Yeah, and I think...
Vendors over-promising things, yeah. Well, yeah. Good point, Joe.
Yeah, I will say definitely the sales guys tend to, you know, they're going to sell you whatever they can, right? But I think there's you put yourselves in the sales guy's shoes. It was hard enough knowing what your product did and didn't do when people asked you about SharePoint. Now you've got to remember what type of SharePoint that customer's got and whether that product's going to run or not.
It's so, just as bad for us now, isn't it? I mean, I'm trying to figure out which features and services are available on-premise, like Todd said earlier, and what's in 365. Yeah. I've been trying to keep two product stacks.
I duck on SKU questions, essentially.
Ruben, there's also some deeper problems as well, like with throttling and the volumes of data that you want to move around with those tools, where people have run into some serious problems. It's gotten better, but definitely needs to be thought about.
Yeah, Ben.
Some of that's not the product. Some of it's Microsoft. Straight up, they're throttling data into 365, and it's slowing down on migrations.
Yeah.
And
that's what I meant.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I took that as what you meant.
So just to kind of cover on that, there is some work that...
thanks, Microsoft.
Yeah. Well, I screamed about it when I was on the other side of the fence, right, because it was impacting the AvPoints products. Yeah. There is some work now going on where we're talking to all of the migration vendors and kind of going, you know, what can we do to kind of help that scenario?
Yeah.
But it is a bit give and take, because it's, you know, mm-hmm. it's a multi-tenant environment. Yeah. We can't have people going crazy on it.
We did get, I mean, with Jeremy on the panel, I know we did get a good number of questions that once they saw that he was on the panel and had a couple things they were giving me.
Sorry, guys.
The classic, no. It was a classic Microsoft thing, which is, you know, what's the story around the form story around SharePoint? Are we going to see another on-prem version?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. But another thing that we heard come up was a lot of around... one gentleman was talking about like different compliance issues, like both with security, with HIPAA, having multiple identities and having to go through and maintain your data security and how secure was it. Another question, I don't know if it was by the same individual, but it was by, there was another individual right next to him talking about how secure your data is at rest. And you guys brought up some really good points too. So Jeff, do you?
Yeah, as I said during the panel, the security in Office 365 is a hell of a lot better than what you're going to have on-premise, no matter how good your security team is. I mean, the NSA gets hacked, you know, with their on-premise stuff. So, you know, they have a whole team of people that are working to secure that, working to get compliance things taken care of. They have different tenants, government tenant, public tenants, things like that, for where your data is being stored and everything like that. So it's a lot more of a secure option. It's really how secure is your stuff internally in your company.
Yeah, you brought up a lot of really good points too around the data security, not just around, I guess part of it was I get a little dismissive on those compliance questions or those security questions, somewhat like, yeah. I guess I answered the question in panel. Ruben did a good job calling me out that I'm the moderator. I wasn't supposed to be answering, but
especially when you answer my question.
I know it was your answer, but it was somebody. I take the attitude of if you're concerned about Microsoft security, I think you're and them securing your data. I think that those concerns are misguided and they're a little bit more at home, because if you think that Microsoft has got more on the line for all of this. Todd, you brought up a really good point too about data being secure once it's in SharePoint, because the way it tears it apart and shreds it and then it's encrypted and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah. So and like you guys have said, Microsoft knows that the security thing is one of the things that people hammer on when stuff's in the cloud. So they're super focused on that. And one of the things that SharePoint 2013 does is it rips these documents apart and it encrypts each little bit and it encrypts it with different keys and it spreads the keys all over the world in super secret locations and bunkers beneath hills to keep this kind of thing from happening. So they're on it, and it's something we can't do.
So if you're saying that the keys are buried in bunkers under hills and everything, and only 10 people have access to the data, they have people buried in the bunkers?
Microsoft's been very cagey about whether they buried their employees or not. They wouldn't answer any direct questions.
If you've seen the Lost with the button that kept getting pushed, it's a similar scenario.
Exactly.
Ruben, you had something to add to this?
I think that it was your point, actually, that your far biggest risk is phishing attacks or other social engineering to get at the data, as opposed, was it you, Ben?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest security, go through any company you have today with more than 10 people, look under the keyboard of all the desks, and you're gonna find usernames and passwords.
You saw my never mind, sorry. I didn't say that.
I'm George, a member from Microsoft.
Well, this is, you're right. I mean, it is a lot of the social engineering stuff, because when you look at like how, the popular attack on how Matt Honan for Wired got compromised and lost his phone, iPad, and Mac with all the data from all his pictures and family, it was all from social hacking, and doing it against Apple and Amazon. So it can happen to anybody.
But even with that, we don't want to discount the necessity of top level physical and data security. And as every one of us, I think, said tonight, that I would pit Microsoft against any, the teams of anyone in this audience today, because of the focus and having the best of the best working on it. It's critical. And the same thing. These things become so public, uptime as well. Clients ask about that, customers ask about that. What's the uptime story look like? Because it's so visible when Amazon or Microsoft has an outage, it's really, people become aware of it, but it's far less than most of my customers have for their on-prem.
Cool, yeah, good point. And the other question that kind of came up that I thought was interesting here was around the data destruction issues that this guy brought up. So it was a backup and restore issue, a backup and restore concern. Part it was what happens if I screw up my list and how do I kind of roll back on that kind of a thing. And I know there was part of it that is part about backup restore and real, like true backup and restore. But then another part of it is, there's only so much that SharePoint does provide in an undo kind of a capability. You guys brought up some good points around that, right?
Yeah, I think the story that I was telling around the SLA is, there is a certain amount that we do from a service out of the box, but people are used to having that ability of like granularly restoring back databases or granularly restoring back site collections and sites. If they've read Todd's blog, he's got huge amounts of guidance on PowerShell on what you can and can't do, which you can't do in the service for good reason.
Right.
But there are a lot of vendors out there that provide that level of granularity still, where if you want to back up a list and all its schema, every hour or every day, you can do that, and then you can pick back on the timeline and restore it.
Yeah.
So if you do need that granularity, it's there. But I think to Reuven's point, it was kind of like, well, how critical is it? And What do we really need to do this, or is it just because historically we've done this and it's, you know, it's a requirement that maybe we don't need to transfer?
Yeah, is it a training issue? Is it a, you know, is it just a, I don't know, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, also like permissions too. If you're giving everybody like full control to delete lists and sites and everything like that, maybe you should throttle that back a bit and only give them like read-only access if they're constantly deleting sites over and over again.
Yeah.
There's also just the recycle bin that comes on-premise and also in Office 365. Delete a document, it's going to be there. There's a second stage recycle bin. You can restore sites, lists, items, stuff like that. And that's usually 95% of the time that will get you across the mark where you need to be.
Yeah, and one of you brought up the point too about the fact that apps now, when they get an app gets deleted, it actually goes in the recycle. Oh, no, it didn't. Sorry, that came from some earlier discussion today, but I found out in the middle of a workshop I was doing today where now when you delete an app in 365, it goes to the recycle bin for a certain amount of time. So,
right.
Yeah. Todd, you had something too.
Yeah, I think the big thing about this, and this comes back to some of the other stuff we've talked about, is this is making people rethink things. So the whole backup and recovery thing, this really isn't any different than what we've been doing for 20 years. You get a product, you get it set up, and then you have to find some way to back it up.
Yeah.
But we've been thinking about on the server side, which obviously we can't do, so people kind of get locked up. But it's the same story. You go to your vendors, you say, hey, I need to back something up. Like, yep, we got a product that backs up Office 365.
Yeah.
And it does it on the back end, it runs in Azure, it does something, but it's all still there. But it's great that people are having these conversations, having conversations about security, having conversations about backup, because I think we kind of got complacent on some of that. So it's good to see these things.
That's a good point, Todd.
Ben also mentioned local sync tools, right? So you've got your offline copy as well as Uploadio.
That was a really good point, too. Yeah, bringing up the Caligos and the OneDrive for Business and everything, and just using those as just a standard sync to just keep it down on your server. So that's really good. So let me ask you guys this. I guess, you know, just to wrap it up here, first, thank you very much for just taking a few minutes after the panel to talk about this stuff.
Anything for you, Andrew.
Appreciate it, Jeff. What do you guys, how do you guys like these panels? Do you guys like doing these panels? What do you like getting out of it? Or is there something about these things that you enjoy doing, or it's a, anything special about it? Yeah, Todd, go first.
I just love that people have a forum where they can just ask any old question. You know, we do these kind of talks all the time. We do the same stuff, and we have a certain context. But I love having these things where people can just ask any question. There's a bunch of really smart people and guys like Jeff that are here to answer questions, and you get a lot of different perspectives. I think it's real valuable to the customer, you know, the attendee, because that's really what this is for, is making sure they get their...
Yeah, Ben sitting here like nodding his head, total agreement here. Yeah, Ruben, how about you?
It's great to get the temperature of the crowd, to hear what the concerns are of people out there. You know, you get that one-on-one, and you know, sometimes you're fairly limited in scope or what you read, and hearing the real concerns of real people, it's a good thing.
It is interesting, because I was a bit taken back that there was almost a theme around compliance, and that's, it was a lot of the same thing kind of kept coming up.
And it's a very specialist area as well, so you know, it's good that with a panel it's valuable to have a good spread of people, and we did have a good, pretty good spread across the top. But
I think the fact you guys were lying out on the tables, though. That was not the spread we were looking for.
the biggest problem I have now is being Microsoft, is that you have to be a little bit more careful with what you're quoting, because, you know, Office 365 is a big platform and you can't be an expert in it by any means.
No,
but it changes
the problem
daily.
And it changes daily.
Yeah.
And, you know, now I can be quoted as Microsoft said, blah, blah, blah. So it's good to kind of get agnostic people up here to give that opinion. But I think you could tell that they were homing in on me with some of the questions.
Well, when it kind of came to some of the company stuff, when it was like, you know, this is what we're doing, I saw a couple of people did just kind of go out and they asked questions that were they were just targeted to try and say, oh, I can get a Microsoft guy to get on the line and I corner him and he's going to answer my question. So that was bound to happen. Thankfully, we kind of moved away from that a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think that was a good moderator.
I think there's more
good
value
moderation
in,
to that.
Yeah.
Excellent moderation.
I honestly think there's more value in hearing from the, you know, the people on the trenches.
Yeah.
They can hear our story, you know, just all the time.
Right? That's what we're doing with the forums thing, right? You know, you gave the kind of story what the company line is. Like, what is everybody doing today?
Right.
Yeah. Jeff, how about you?
I love these things. It gives a good chance to, like, actually get feedback and have audience interaction. A lot of sessions you teach and everybody's just
deadpan,
afraid to like ask questions or anything like that. And then we have, you know, it's not, you're not just getting just one-on-one with one person. You have other people in the crowd like starting to think of ideas, and then also the other panelists too, to be able to build on things that, you know, have already been said. So I think it's a fantastic experience.
That's a good part, good point, Jeff.
I think everybody appreciated Jeremy announcing the date of the next forum solution.
I know, that wasn't that great? Yeah, yeah. I don't know if we should say.
I just did check Twitter to see what people, anyone was outraged enough to quote me, misquote me.
That's good fun. Well, thanks a lot, guys. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys.
All right. So we just we just went through and played the interview that I did with Jeff Verosky, Ben Curry, Ruben Gotz, Todd Clint, and Jeremy Thake. And all of their contact info will be in the show notes. So if you want to find out more about these people, just head on over to the podcast on our website, themicrosoftcloudshow.com. This is episode 47, and you can see some of their contact info. Yeah, so just to kind of recap what they were saying, I mean, we're not going to rehash everything that went on in the interview, but just to kind of add a couple extra thoughts here is that, you know, one of the themes that you keep seeing come up in the discussion between staying on-prem or going to 365, a couple things just always come up, it seems. One of them is around the regulatory space, and people say, well, 365 isn't there, it's not ready yet or whatever. And this is not giving Microsoft a pass or saying that it's not their fault, not saying 365 is not their fault. But from my perspective, this is not a 365 issue. This is a cloud issue. This is something that Amazon's, Microsoft's, 365, Salesforce, Google Cloud, this is what everybody's trying to figure out a way around this. The industries are not caught up. The regulations are not caught up on where we are with the cloud.
Yeah, with technology in general, almost.
Yeah, exactly. And this, especially with this thing in the cloud, and when you deal with like regulated businesses like financial services or biotech or any of that stuff, it's just something that it's not there yet, but it's something that I think that we're going to see the governments approach and deal with sooner rather than later. And that's not giving 365 a pass. That's simply saying 365 is going to benefit from these issues that we have in a bigger state, so that they won't be so much Office 365 specific issues. They'll be cloud issues that the governments will figure out a way to fix this stuff. And it'll be in everyone's best interest, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, to make their data centers and their cloud offerings meet these requirements so that more customers can use their products.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, it's different by every geography around the world and all of those kinds of things, right? So it's tough, right? Because there's lots of different standards and lots of different regulatory conditions and things like that, and it's going to take some time to shake down and get some common ground. Having said that, you know, I think a lot of people think 365 specifically is in worse shape than it is when it comes to meeting standards and things like that. So I'm not an expert in this stuff, but I would recommend people go take a look at the 365 Trust Center and look at the standards that it does meet today and all that sort of stuff, and do some reading, because I think some of it is FUD too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny because offline Jeremy and I were talking, and I found it kind of comical that he made a good point, and in one sense, it was a very personal point, but I think that it's better for most people who are asking these questions, and that you don't want to try and corner a Microsoft guy and you want to ask these questions. Jeremy, we were talking about how, you know, he's relatively new to Microsoft, or at least, you know, 5-6 months new to Microsoft. And so he's got to be careful about some things that he says around those regulatory things, because they're easily quotable things. And it's not just Jeremy, it's anybody. So, I mean, all of you guys, I know you want to be very careful about what you say, because those are really... those statements can be really, you know, caught on by the press and everything. And so you really want to make sure that you rely on what the powers that be that really have a firm grasp on what the product can and can't support and what it does, what the stance is on certain regulations. And so that Trust Center site, that is really the best place to go, because you're going to get the company line on you know, what the state of things are and all that kind of stuff. It's just, it's better to get it that way than trying to corner some Microsoft guy and get him to say something that isn't gonna hold up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the first to admit I don't know enough about it to speak in an educated way. So I sort of just try to bow out and point people that can.
Yeah. Hey, so there was another thing that came up real quick. Last point we'll just kind of wrap on before we close up this episode. It's a common theme that I see that also comes up in this discussion, and it's around people that say that I'm concerned about putting my stuff in Office 365, or let's just expand that and say I'm concerned about putting my stuff in the cloud, with things like the NSA, with things like being able to see some interesting pictures of Jennifer Lawrence recently. You know, is my stuff more safe and secure inside of the cloud than it is on-prem? I feel safer with my stuff on-prem.
Yeah, that's a real curly one, right? Because I think that's a false sense of security, and just feeling like you're more secure because you've got a better grip on your stuff on-prem. And in all likelihood, you're probably far less secure.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do, to do what we do, like to do what we do in Office 365 from a security point of view, on-prem and in your own data centers and your own environments and things, is usually by far and away far too cost prohibitive to actually implement in most customers' own environments.
Yeah, it is. I think the way that we brought it up with this one individual that it came up to during the discussion or during the panel, the way I look at it is that if you get compromised, yes, it's a big deal to you and it's a big deal for losing your data. But in the grand scheme of things, it only addresses your company. If someone like Microsoft or Amazon or Google or Apple gets compromised, then they're doing it. They have a significant number of customers that are on that same platform and they're all getting compromised. And so I relate it to, like, let's say if you don't believe in banks and you keep all your money at home and you stick it under the mattress and you have your own little register that you use, a little notebook. If you can't balance your checkbook and get it straight, that's your problem. If you keep your money with a Wells Fargo or a Bank of America and they can't balance your checkbook,
yeah,
they have a very big problem. So
that's a different kettle of fish, isn't it?
Yeah. Let them, I think, you know, they're backed by big SLAs and they financially backed SLAs. And so I would rather let Microsoft deal with the security problems and I'll just get ticked off when I lose some of my data or if my data gets compromised. But I feel much more secure knowing that they're handling my backups. They're handling all my data security.
Yeah, that said, that security is always the case of, like, it's always a weakest link type thing, right? So, you know, you'll still get hacked if you've got a weak part of the chain and it gets broken. And to be honest, I honestly see the majority of break-ins and all that sort of stuff these days, not just in 365, but across all sort of services, no matter what they happen to be. Like the iCloud one's a perfect example, right?
Mm.
Where it looks like it wasn't breaking into iCloud's back end, it was breaking in through some other PC or some front end. And 365 is no different, right? If you hack the person's desktop computer and get in as them, you're still in as them. It doesn't mean you have to come in through the back door of the data center in the States or in APAC or wherever it happens to be to get into the 365 data. I bet the weakest link will still be the front door.
Agreed.
You know, on the desktop.
Yep, totally agree. We got anything else you want to add on this one before we wrap it?
No, I think there was, plenty of commentary about, whether 365 is right or wrong or when to move and all that sort of stuff. And I think the same rules apply. You know, one size doesn't fit all. It's not a simple yes, no decision. It has to be done on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, totally agree. Cool. All right. Well, that's part one of all the SB TechCon panel discussions that we had from SB TechCon in Boston. That was the week of September the 15th through the 19th. So we got part two and part three coming up. The next episode's all going to be about from the developer panel. The third part's all going to be around the InfoPath panel. So with that, thanks a lot. And thank you very much to Jeff Rosky, Ben Curry, Ruben Gotz, Todd Clint, and Jeremy Thake for sticking around a few minutes after the panel to let me to shove a microphone in your face.
Yeah, thanks very much, guys.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS. At microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.